I titled this address, What Feels Most Impossible Now? And when I did that, it felt impossible to complete it. I thought I would reflect on how we might reconcile some of life's most challenging and often insurmountable aspects. When I was writing this, I found myself considering the idea of human flourishing, a concept that predates the Christian movement. It requires an inclusive and compassionate approach that will transcend divisions and embrace diversity. It has to. Yet the diversity that is human life does create divisions in our society. Not everyone wants this diversity under the piece of sky that they inhabit. What we can do is adopt the practice of solidarity, open-mindedness, and dialogue. The divisions evident in Irish society are perhaps not as divisive yet as they are in other places, perhaps because an identifiable or effective leader hasn't yet emerged. But first, a search, not using an internet search engine or artificial intelligence, but a quiet, courageous search of our own heart will reveal to us what feels most impossible to us today. And whatever it is, you already know it. The heart knoweth. When life presses in and the world feels overwhelming, how do we cope with that weight? There are, of course, resources within, and there we know what matters most. Throughout our lives, we build a foundation that gives our lives meaning and abundance. It is love and friendship, health, community, and all the good things we are graced with each and every day. And these are not small things. They are the bedrock upon which I stand when storms gather. In my address titled Finding Wisdom a couple of weeks ago, I quoted the poet James Stevens, who wrote, "It is the function of the artist to transform all that is sad, all that is ugly, all that is real into one quality which reconciles the diversities that trouble us into pure poetry." And can we in our ordinary lives be that artist? Can we reconcile what Stevens calls the diversities that trouble us? Now, he wasn't talking about the rich diversities of color, of language, of culture, or religion. Those gifts are to be celebrated, and I'll return to speak about these. He was speaking, rather, of the chaotic, seemingly irreconcilable elements of human experience. The tensions between good and evil, joy, sorrow, breathtaking beauty, and raw ugliness. And how do we begin to reconcile these jarring notes of human existence? And to be quite honest with you, at times it feels utterly impossible. Religion. Can religion help navigate what feels impossible? Well, the answer depends entirely on how you might define religion. If religion is understood as a set of rigid, unbending dogmas that divides humanity, then of course not. It only adds to the impossibility. But if we understand religion as the practice of holding certain things in deep reverence, believing them to be sacred, then the answer is different. What we hold sacred springs directly from our lived experience. It is an expression of what is of paramount importance to each of us. And through the shifts and the losses and the triumphs of life, we gain understanding. The meaning and fulfillment we seek are found not in abstract theological formulas, but in the depth and quality of the relationships we build. The sacred is found in the experience of living and moving in this world, in family, in deep friendship, and in the beauty of creation. And for Unitarians, the doorway through which we glimpse the sacred, or that which is of paramount importance, is wide open. It's not dependent on rules or dogmas or religious tests. And part of the core purpose of gatherings like ours is to respond to the universal human longing for kindness, for connection, for meaning, and for purpose. We recognize the profound interconnectedness of life, seeking a more loving way of living alongside one another. Human flourishing, or as my favorite hymn lyric puts it, that all may have abundant life in every earthly nation. It was Aristotle who gave us the notion of human flourishing. He argued that what every human being fundamentally seeks is a deep, lasting sense of well-being, and he called this eudaimonia, or human flourishing. But for this to be achieved, Aristotle believed that all efforts in government, all efforts in life, should be directed towards human flourishing for all. Where I part ways with Aristotle is in his narrow definition of who is eligible. Aristotle was an elitist. He saw no reason to extend this effort to the stranger, to those of lower status than him, or indeed to foreigners. In essence, his ethic was, love your neighbor as yourself, provided your neighbor is of the same social class. Now, tragically, we see this attitude today. We see religious, political, and social movements that preach flourishing, but only for our own, denying basic dignity to the outsider. Yet Aristotle's core intuition, I think, remains sound. All efforts in governance, all efforts in life should be directed towards human flourishing for all. Now, this was, I believe, the thrust of the very early Christian communities, the establishment of the beloved community, all inspired by the stories told about Jesus of Nazareth. So what about living in this diverse world? What feels impossible right now is learning how to live and flourish together in this diverse world. And I believe that diversity is as crucial as gravity, to quote Saville Hicks. Humanity is made up of diversities of color, language, culture, religion, gender, and sexuality. Can we establish a society where everyone, in all their distinctiveness, is afforded the space to thrive and to flourish? We see people taking to the streets with flags, with slogans, with violent words and violent actions to oppose this idea. Live and flourish elsewhere, not here. While physical violence erupts occasionally, more engage in subtle and a toxic war of words, preying on anxieties, and a climate of casual hostility poisons public life and leaves many feeling powerless to respond effectively. People do adopt prejudices, ancient prejudices, declaring that only those who look, who act, who worship and love like them are deserving of our kindness, our welcome and our love. They believe that they have an enemy to defeat. Whatever it may be woke, it may be the EU, the diversity agenda, and everything will be fine again. And what feels quite impossible to me right now is how to deal with the diversities that James Stevens was talking about. Good, evil, joy, sorrow, and the breathtaking beauty of the earth, but also the raw ugliness of human behavior. Now, many protests against diversity focus heavily on gender, sexuality, ethnicity, and nationalism. Consider a protest outside the Dáil earlier in the summer I told you about. Speakers targeted gay people, the trans community, men from the Middle East, and women from Somalia. They held national flags alongside crosses and images of Jesus, appealing to some biblical standard. And in that moment, I wondered, do these people think they're following in the tradition of that great Irish patriot, Daniel O'Connell, who said, "My sympathy with distress is not confined within the narrow bounds of my own green island. No, it extends to every corner of the earth, and I hope including this corner of the earth Mr. O'Connell? And then what about that biblical standard so many claim to live by? Now, while Unitarians don't hold the Bible to be the absolute rule of life, the text does contain harsh words for those who fail to welcome the foreigner, while condemning those who neglect those struggling with poverty, with homelessness, and with prejudice. It deeply troubles me that we so easily blame those who are vulnerable for our troubles, real or imagined. But there always has been a market for someone to blame. Systematic failure is where the blame belongs, with policy choices, with collective apathy, really at the heart of government where blame lies. Liz Slade is the chief officer of the General Assembly of Unitarian and Free Christian Churches, and she recently reflected on these deep societal tensions. She was addressing a situation where a conference venue in England excluded Unitarian gatherings, stating that their charitable purpose required them to prioritize Trinitarian Christian groups. And because our non-creedal tradition is Unitarian rather than Trinitarian, we were excluded. Fine. We'll be fine. We gather around a shared practice of spiritual discernment rather than a static statement of belief. But this led her then to reflect on the general conflict and tension, particularly when divisions are divisive and seemingly impossible to resolve. She writes, "It feels important to give attention to the voices from all sides in a conflict, to give voice to accounts of devastation and pain that most of us will thankfully not encounter. My conscience tells me that abhorring genocide does not mean I tolerate anti-Semitism or vice versa. When there is no real dialogue, it can be easy for people to feel trapped in narrow binaries. You're either for or against us. It is essential," she says, "in honoring the dignity of the lives of those entangled in the countless years of violence and the intense devastation of recent years, that we make space to bear witness. For Unitarians, bearing witness could mean solidarity. It means standing together across difference and remaining open to learning and investing in relationships even when disagreement runs deep. In her words, it means becoming attuned to hear the truth in unlikely places. Yet this solidarity does have a real cost. It requires us abandoning the comfort of our own tribal echo chamber. Yet it is a genuine expression and an acknowledgement of our shared humanity." My friend and colleague from Unitarian College, Rob Foreman, has also been reflecting on the growing divisions in British public life, and he wrote a public letter to the new Prime Minister, Andy Burnham. He says, "Disagreement has to be survivable. An argument you never lose is an argument you never learn from." His point is, disagreement is not fatal, nor is it an invitation to attack. You can hold a conviction passionately without needing the person opposite you destroyed. It is important for us all to understand that being heard and being agreed with are not the same thing. And those who do feel beaten will escalate the row. The words get bigger and resolution becomes ever more distant. If Unitarianism is a free and inquiring religion, then it means that we approach a question with the assumption that we could be wrong, and that the person arguing across the table from us is arguing in good faith. The point of the conversation is to get closer to something that is true rather than to win. When I spoke about resolving conflicts a few weeks ago, I wondered if we might approach conflict with a curious mindset rather than with a defensive posture. Why do they hold that position? Why does it matter to them so much? Because what matters to them may very well be the same as what matters to me. Making time and room to discover these things reveals just how much we actually share, because we all have in our lives things that are of paramount importance, even sacred. And let's begin there, and perhaps we can transform a divided society. And this leads me back then to that anchor point in our lives where we can ground ourselves upon the sacred foundations of our lives: love, friendship, health, community, and the good things we are graced with each day. Facing the impossible begins when we reach for the resources that are within. And anchored in that space, perhaps we can face what feels most impossible and slowly quieten the noise competing for our attention. We can listen to the voice that speaks from the stillness of our hearts. There is deeper truth, and it lies within. It rests not upon an exalted throne, but upon a stone, humble, accessible, and grounded in nature. Truth is not something handed down by an external authority. It is discovered, shaped, and shared by ordinary people walking together through time. We say here that the paths of faith, meaning, and truth runs through many lands, many cultures, and many traditions. But ultimately, truth must find a home and a resting place in our own hearts and in our own minds. So look there first. But as you look inward, remain open to what you might learn when you look out. Amen.